Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Morning, Shasta County. Again, Billy Joel, My Life. This is Kevin Cry, and this is my show. Welcome. It is July 30th. It's Sunday. It's beautiful. It's nice. Our faces aren't melting quite yet, and actually, it isn't going to be as bad as it's been lately with the weather. We have a high of 98 degrees, but I'll tell you, I want to let you know that a good friend of mine has started a venture, not necessarily recently, a couple months ago, and that's Mike Kruger. Many of us know him as the greatest meteorologist our area has ever seen. Mike Kruger has Weather NorCal now. So this report comes from him off of his app that I'll talk about here shortly. But it's going to be slightly warmer tomorrow and Tuesday with highs around 100 before we drop back down to the mid-90s by midweek. You can always get the latest forecast from Mike Kruger at weathernorcal.com. You can also download the Weather NorCal app on your iPhone or Android. There is also a 24-hour streaming channel on YouTube, Roku, Amazon, Fire Stick, and Apple TV will be available soon. So thank you, Mr. Mike Kruger, for that weather update this morning. I want to say good morning also to my uncle, who is listening in Yarupa Valley or Riverside, and my dad down in San Diego. Oftentimes I forget because they make sure that they let me know they're going to be listening. And my mom, of course, always listens, but then she probably listens to the replay four or five times during the week. So I don't ever bring that up, but I'm very, very lucky. I got great supportive parents, and it doesn't matter what age you are, having supportive parents is probably one of the greatest things we can have. So with all that, we have a show today that I have been looking forward to. Actually, I went to bed at like 5 o'clock this morning just preparing, reading over different materials. So we're going to move right into it. We're going to really cover just 2.5 topics today. At our last Board of Supervisors meeting this last Tuesday, we had the Redding Rancheria was on the agenda about the compact and about the deal with the county and the tribe. And so we had that. We're going to start with that. But then we also had, I wouldn't call it a hearing, but I would call it a presentation from Stephanie Bridget and our DA, Stephanie Bridget, and our CAO's office in regards to the Zog Fire settlement. So we're going to talk about those two things. We're going to talk briefly about a new CCW program that Sheriff Johnson has brought forward. And there was a lot of other definitely hot-button topics. But those are the 2.5 we're going to talk with. So we're going to jump right in with the Rancheria. So the Rancheria deal, there is a lot of, I guess you'd say, confusion where people think that this was a rushed, last-minute deal. And, again, you can go back and watch the recording, but this was actually a rushed deal 4.5 years, roughly, in the making. And what I mean by that is ever since the tribe has been on 273, our fire, our sheriff, medical, any calls for service out at the Rancheria at Wind River is not, they don't pay a dime for that directly to the county, and they haven't. So we get $0. Well, when the tribe decided to move and they wanted help, or they wanted a partnership, they wanted the county board of supervisors in the city of Redding to support the move, because that was going to help their case with the Bureau of Indian Affairs and all the power brokers that be, they didn't get it. They didn't get the support from the county. And actually, it was not just not getting it. It was actually the opposite. It was almost like they were being worked against. And so fast forward to the board prior to Supervisor Kelstrom and I getting on, they actually voted, and a supervisor reversed their decision. You have to ask him why he reversed his decision. And they voted 3-2 to actually support the move. Or I'm sorry, 4-1. I'm sorry, 3-2. And they decided to support the move. So in that, a deal came forward, and in that deal, the county sent back basically something that wasn't really going to work for the tribe. It was almost like they maybe didn't want to negotiate so much, but the numbers were off. So that was, and that's in like 2019. And what you see is in this deal, they put in there 30 years. The county put a 30-year time limit on it because the compact with the Bureau of Indian Affairs is 25 years. So one of the things that my fellow supervisors and I that voted on this 4-1 this last week of this partnership was how can we make a deal for 30 years? Well, that 30-year timestamp was put forth a long time ago, and nobody ever had a problem with that. And for us, like I said, we've been getting $0. So as I, in my campaign, as I move forward, and then I wound up winning, and I'm sitting in and I'm listening to the very first CEO, and I was there, was Pat Minturn, who was the interim CEO, and then after that, it was the interim CEO, Mary Williams. So in the time I was there in the first 2 months, I had two different CEOs that were working on this, and there was actually an assistant CEO working on it who's on leave, and there was two different attorneys. There was Ruben Cruz, who's retired, and there was Jim Ross, who was retired. So I'm seeing this as a supervisor saying, hey, they don't have to give us a dime, and if we keep dragging our feet, they may just take their ball and go home where we're going to get nothing, like absolutely nothing, because the city of Redding gets nothing, like the million plus for police and million plus for fire, that could go to the city of Redding, but it didn't. The county can get that. But what I started to realize was if this keeps dragging on, at what point does the tribe say, we're out of here? And I wasn't the only one pushing this. You had Chair Jones, Supervisor Garment, and again, unbeknownst to me, they were actually talking to the CEOs as well. They were having their own conversations with the tribe. And because of the Brown Act, you get to talk to one person. So I had talked to Chair Jones about 3 months ago and said, hey, we got to get this on the agenda because I really feel like they're going to walk. And once we got it on the agenda and brought it forth, we found out that some of our elected leaders and our fire chief at the county chief of fire, who's not elected, but he is obviously the top, I guess you would say, ranking of fire official with the county and Cal Fire, they didn't know anything about it. Now, I can't say as to why or if that's true. And, of course, I believe them. I believe that they didn't ever see the original agreement, but they wanted more time. And I'm just to the point where I was like, hey, we got to move forward because we have one in the hand versus two in the bush. The 30-year thing was obviously put forth by the county, and that wasn't spoken about in the supervisors' meeting. So we wound up passing this, like I said, 4-1. The county now is in a position with the rancheria where we all know we're moving forward. We've got it all locked in. And I'm excited about that because the tribe does a lot for our community. But here's the one thing. DA Stephanie Bridget said, and I'm going to go into the record searchlight. And again, I have, and there's no secret, I don't have this high praise for media really at all in general to a point. But one thing I'll tell you is the record searchlight interviewed DA Stephanie Bridget after the meeting, and so I'm going to read this directly from the a few paragraphs in from David Benda's report, and I quote: Shasta County DA Stephanie Bridget said she became aware of the agreement Monday when she looked at the agenda. So Stephanie Bridget says this is the very first time she sees it. That's fine. And then it says, I quote, since 2017, Bridget said she had been involved in negotiations with the county administration and members of the board about the casino project and its impact on law enforcement. So I get it. 2017, she was involved in negotiations, and that I'm sure went through 2019, then you have COVID and 20. But here's the thing for me, and this isn't a blame game, because what I've learned in government is stuff gets brought up, life, I'm doing air quotes, you can't see it, but life gets busy, and then things get tabled, and then things never get completed. I've got major ADHD, OCD, and the OCD isn't obviously a medical verified thing, but I will make sure the lights are turned off two or three times before a trip and things like that. I've learned at my age of 46, I have to get things off my plate because if I put it off, I'll either stress about it or I worry about missing it, not coming back to it. And it served me very well as a husband and as a father, but it definitely served me well entrepreneurially. So when this came up during my campaign about getting this deal done, I've just been on it. And so this is a perfect example. So if Stephanie Bridget was in those negotiations, because I never heard Sheriff Johnson say he was in the negotiations. I never heard Fire Chief Sean O'Hara talk about being involved, but Stephanie Bridget, per the record searchlight, was involved. So for me, if there was one point that she was involved in it, then I would think there would have to be continuous follow-through, because that's on your plate, because that's a very, 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 very big deal. So here nor there, but I just want to make it clear that at one point she was involved in the negotiations, if you believe David Benda's reporting. And again, that's why I do put a big asterisk next to that. Okay, so here's the last part, and this is where I'm going to go into the CCW card, and I'll tie this in. Sheriff Johnson later in the meeting came up and said, hey, we have a new CCW hard card program. What that means is, for those that of you that have a CCW, or even if you don't, you're issued a little piece of paper that it's a weird size, and you got to fold up in half, and you put it in your wallet, your purse, your fanny pack, whatever, money clip, and the thing just disintegrates over time because you have it for, I think, 4 years. And so they're making it actually like a hard card, like something like a credit card. And I'm excited about that because now you can carry it. You don't have to worry about it. If you have, you know, board shorts on and you're carrying, then you can put it in your shorts and you don't have to worry about it getting wet because it's going to be good. And so I had asked Sheriff Johnson, that this is great. Is there a cost? He said, yeah, $4. I'm like, that's perfect. $4, an extra $4 that's worth it to me. It'll be worth it to, I think, everybody. But I asked him, I said, hey, is this going to be recognized by other sheriffs? And he said, well, he's been working, I believe he's been working with the state or been working with other sheriffs, and he just got tired of waiting, and he's going to be emailing the sheriffs when this comes out, and in good faith, he's going to push this out, and then assuming in good faith, other sheriffs will recognize our hard card opposed to our paper card. And I thought that was interesting because one of the things in our negotiations with Rancheria, I said, I personally feel that you make a deal with the person and you have to do contracts. That's obvious. But I think it's lost in society today where people can trust one another and there has to be some good faith. And so when we closed the Redding Rancheria agreement earlier, that was a big point of contention. People thought I was naive because I want to negotiate or work with the tribe in good faith. But then when Sheriff Johnson comes back and said he's going to work with the sheriffs across the state with our hard card in good faith, I mean, that proves my point that we can do things in good faith and that's okay. So I was excited that Sheriff Johnson said that there's a lot of power in good faith, especially with sheriffs in that capacity, because that's the same thing I feel with our tribe. So I want to just wrap that segment up. So here's what we have. We're going to go into a break. When we come back, we're going to unpack the Zog Fire settlement. And when I say unpack it, it's going to take probably weeks, maybe a couple months. I don't know. But I've been asking a lot of questions, doing a lot of reading, and we're going to listen to some clips. And it's going to get very interesting, and I'm excited because I ran on transparency. And I got to tell you, when I ran on transparency and fighting government corruption, some of that, right, is rhetoric. And I'm not going to call it propaganda, but you start to believe when you see the things that we saw during the shutdown, during COVID, and over time, you just believe. You're like, hey, there has to be truth to some of this that's out there. And you can go back into April 14th of 22 and all different articles, the record search or anybody else wrote. I was usually always quoted as being, you know, this far-right extremist. But my platform was about government corruption and transparency. So I've just been asking questions, and I have a lot to share. So we'll be right back in about 1 minute, and we're going to get to work.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
Satisfy your cravings with Roliberto's Taco Shop at the corner of California and Placer in downtown Redding. Enjoy breakfast burritos from 9 a.m. to noon for only $6.99. And don't miss Taco Tuesday. Choose from chicken, beef, or ground beef tacos for only $2.25 each. Roliberto's Taco Shop also offers burritos, taco salads, and delicious combination plates, including two crispy tacos, a taco and enchilada, taco and tostada, carne asada, fajitas, and more at Roliberto's Taco Shop. Taco Shop at 1701 California Street in downtown Reading. Mention you heard this ad on KCNR and receive a free taco between 6 and 9 p.m. Open Monday through Wednesday, 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. Thursday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 2 a.m. and Sundays, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Order through DoorDash for delivery or call 530-605-0724 for takeout or join us at Roliberto's Taco Shop at the corner of California and Placer in downtown Reading.
Now, Daddy didn't like trouble, but if it came along, everyone that knew him knew which side that he'd be on. He never was a hero for this county's shining light, but you could always find him standing up for what he thought was right. He'd say, you've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything.
All right, we are back. Shasta County. We're here in District 1 at KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. Heart of Reading, District 1, heart of Shasta County. And, okay, so, yeah, you have to stand for something or you fall for everything. So, again, I don't want this to come across as, like, super accusatory, but there's a lot of questions being asked, and I want answers. And I think a lot of, I don't think, I know, a lot of citizens in Shasta County want answers, because the reason this started was there's a gentleman that came to public comment maybe a month, 6 weeks ago, and just asked about the settlement. And if you don't know, the settlement was there was a criminal trial with the four deaths out of the Zog fire. And out of that came a $50 million civil settlement for the case. And the money went to a lot of great nonprofits and a lot of great entities. But the question that we've received over and over and over is, why those places? How do they tie in? And that's originally kind of where I started, and I wanted to make sure that the community would get some answers. But it's gone a little bit deeper and a little bit different in that. So we're going to play a clip from the Board of Supervisors meeting. Now, if you want to go and watch the whole presentation, you can go to the Board of Supervisors website. You can click on the meeting videos, and you can fast forward to about the sixth hour. I know, sixth hour, because it was about a 10-hour meeting. You fast forward to the sixth hour and start there. But we're going to go to 6:07 right now. So, Liam, let's go ahead and play this first clip.
So what did the civil settlement have to do with dismissing the criminal case? I mean, what was the delineation between the criminal side and the settlement side?
The only thing I would be able to tell you, because a lot of the negotiation or all of the negotiations are confidential negotiations, would be that the procedural posture of the criminal case was such that it was likely not going to get to go forward, given some rulings by our local judge, who doesn't quite agree that PG&E as a corporation should be held liable criminally. So instead of having that happen and have our community end up with nothing, we proceeded with a civil prosecution.
All right. So I have a number of questions as well over the allocation of all those funds, but I still do not understand the following. D.A. Bridget indicated the criminal case had to be dropped because of a judge that favored PG&E's version of the case. And that is why D.A. Bridget was compelled to settle the case for $50 million, because the procedural posture of the case meant it couldn't go forward. Or, in my words, the judge didn't believe PG&E was guilty. But I read his ruling, and his ruling states this, and I quote, had the tree been identified and marked for removal at any of the 4+ opportunities to do so prior to ignition of the Zog fire, the failure to have it removed would clearly be reckless and or criminally negligent. Then he goes on to state, in quote, this tree was not a known risk prior to the Zog fire, and there is no evidence to support the people's claim in their opposition that it was. Okay, Liam, let's play the next clip, 608.36 to 609.20.
Yeah, okay, I mean, so I'm looking at my notes, but, you know, I've read the ruling, and the judge appears to state that PG&E could not be found guilty because they didn't know about the dangers of the gray pine tree that fell. Mm-hmm. And that's one of my questions. That's why I'm curious to see the CAL FIRE report, because the judge says that if they were aware of the tree, if the tree had been marked for removal, they would be guilty. Is that correct?
That particular judge would have denied the 995 motion, which is a motion to set aside a ruling at a preliminary hearing.
But wasn't it true that the grapevine tree that caused this fire was marked by PG&E?
That would be our position. That is correct.
But that's
okay. So you heard that. That would be the DA's position. So I have two questions that weren't really answered by the district attorney. And again, when I'm up there as a supervisor, and I'm not trying to interrogate or cross-examine our district attorney, but I want answers. And thinking on my feet, just as a coach, a Joe Blow, dad who's just doing his thing, you want to be respectful, but at the same time, as a coach, and I've mentioned this many, many times, when I go back and look at these supervisors' meetings, it's like game film. I watch it. I say, I could have asked that, or I didn't have that information then, but I do now. So here's the two questions that really weren't answered. It says, did the judge know that PG&E had, in fact, marked that grapevine tree for removal? And if the judge didn't know that, why not? And that wasn't answered. And because here's what's really, really troubling was because from what I've read, and I kind of stated it in that clip, everyone involved with this case, including PG&E, knew that that tree was marked but failed to cut that tree down. And to compound the problem for the district attorney's office is there are a number of agencies that had already determined that grapevine tree was marked. And I figured I'm going to read some of those organizations and court documents. Now, these are court documents that you can go to the clerk's office, pay 25 cents a page, and get for yourself. But this first documented, factual, everybody agrees, been presented in court that agrees, is this first actual one comes from the DA's crime report itself. This is the DA's crime report on this exact topic. I quote, the cause of the Zog fire was determined to be a grapevine falling in a southerly direction, striking power lines owned and operated by Pacific Gas and Electric Company. PG&E has identified the power line as the Gervan 1101-12 KV distribution circuit. An arborist and electrical engineer were retained by Cal Fire to provide an assessment of the grapevine and damaged electrical conductor. The arborist determined the grapevine was over 105 feet tall and over 2 feet in diameter at the base. The tree had decay and a significant cavity at the base of the tree that would have predisposed it to a downward slope failure. The tree was over 80 years old, and in 2019, it had a 23-degree lean toward the power lines. The 23-degree lean was determined by the arborist. End quote. So I'm going to jump back to this, but I want to make sure we all understand this is a massive tree. It's old. It's scarred. It's falling over towards power lines. This is the DA's report, the crime report. Picking it back up, and I quote, the lean would have been obvious to pre-inspectors. Decay was observed in the center of the tree. The cavity and absence of supporting roots on the cavity side would have been visible from the sides and uphill, even if briefly viewed. The roots on both sides of the cavity were excessively large, which was evidence that they had developed over a long period of high mechanical stress. The cavity was determined to have predated the Zog fire and Car fire. End quote. So here's the thing. Again, it's obvious. It's been there a long time. If established protocols for hazard tree identification removal had been followed, the tree defect would have been discovered and subsequently removed prior to failure. I mean, this is publicly available information, and it demonstrates it. In 2018, PG&E marked the grapevine for removal that caused the Zog fire. I'm going to say that again. I mean, this is public information that in 2018, PG&E marked the tree that caused the Zog fire, and that grapevine was not removed. And subsequent PG&E vegetation management patrols failed to mark or remove the tree. PG&E has repeatedly and publicly acknowledged its awareness that such failures are likely to produce great bodily harm or death. Okay, so the second court-documented report is the Cal Fire report, and it states, subject one, PG&E recklessly caused a wildfire by failing to remove a grapevine with obvious injury at the base trunk of the tree. As a result, the tree fell a southerly direction and truck energized power lines owned and operated by PG&E. The cause of the fire was determined to be a grapevine with a previous injury to the base of the trunk falling in a southerly direction, striking power lines owned and operated by Pacific Gas and Electric Company. All other possible causes were eliminated during the investigation. I mean, are we seeing the theme here? So you have the DA's crime report as well as the Cal Fire report saying the same exact thing. And craziness, right? Okay, so the third. And this is the Enforcement Division of the California Public Utilities Commission. Again, this is the Enforcement Division. So this is like, I don't want to say Big Brother, but this is the I don't want to call it the bully, but we'll say this is the Darth Vader, right, of energy. This is who enforces this, of the California Public Utilities Commission. They made findings that provide, in quote, Mountain G performed vegetation management work in August of 2018 in the area near the Zog Mine Road in Shasta County. On August 23, 2018, Mountain G identified two gray pine trees, tree IDs 6557 and 6558, for removal under Priority 2. Now, I can't tell you what Priority 2 is because I wasn't able to find that, but it's just Priority 2. It's there. However, PG&E did not remove the two gray pine trees. By cross-referencing the GPS coordinates of tree IDs 6557 and 6558 from PG&E's records, CAL FIRE's GPS coordinates of the ignition area, PG&E plotted facilities maps and the location of the tree that fell, point of contact, and PG&E pole from the arborist report. SED is determined with a high degree of certainty that the tree fell and struck the power lines was either ID 6557 or 6558. In addition, based on PG&E's aerial photos and the position of the marked trees to the power lines where there were no other gray pines in the area other than those two trees could have been there and the tree that fell, or that could have been the tree that, fell. Failure to remove trees identified for removal by inspectors due to poor record keeping. SED believes this violation directly caused the fire since one of these trees identified for removal was the tree that caused the fire. So, again, right, when we talk about the judge not knowing this, how does the judge not know this? Well, you know, I believe the judge probably does know that, but he can't make the people's case for them. All right, so the judge that oversaw PG&E's probation made findings as well, and his findings provided that in our most recent wildfire season, a windstorm blew a tall gray pine onto a PG&E distribution line in Shasta County, pushing the power conductors together, thereby unleashing a bolt of electricity and thus igniting what became known as the Zog Fire. 2 years earlier, PG&E, through its contractor, had marked the gray pine as a hazard and slated it for removal. Standing more than 100 feet tall, the gray pine leaned at more than 20 degrees from vertical, looming downhill over PG&E's Girvan Circuit, the distribution line in question. It remained obvious that if it fell in the direction of the lean, it would fall in the power lines. Grapevines, it was further known, have shallow root systems. Again, you know, I'm reading this because I want you to understand, I mean, this is all the same thing from different entities, different organizations, different men and women going out there making their observations, and there is unequivocally no difference in what they're all reporting. Grapevines, it was further known, have shallow root systems and topple more easily than trees with tap roots. And this particular tree, although it had a healthy canopy, had a severe tall scar at its base. The contractor was correct to mark the tree for removal. PG&E, however, did not remove it. 2 years went by, and in a windstorm in September of 2020, as stated, the grapevine blew onto the circuit, ignited the Zog Fire, and four people died. 204 structures were lost. So that was the judge that oversaw PG&E's probation, and those are his findings. Okay, so where we are right now is when I had asked DA Stephanie Bridget about did the judge know? I mean, how could the judge not know? Okay, but he can't say, hey, I know about this, and this is the issue for me. Is what they could have done is they could have just dismissed the case, and then they could have refiled the case and put all of this information forward and then retried it. And that's not what happened, right? They instead say there's not enough evidence to go forward. Now, why in the world this wasn't put into evidence, I have no idea. Somebody needs to ask our district attorney or Ben Hanna, who is the prosecutor, the lead prosecutor in this, why this wasn't introduced into evidence. So I'm going to go back now. So the same judge that we just spoke about a second ago with the probation findings and everything else William Alsup had some further comments for PG&E at one of their final probation hearings. And he stated that, in quotes, and this is long, so I'll get some voice inflection, but it's important you understand all the judges, all the people, all the contractors, all the entities, all the spokespeople, and what they're saying about this. Because this case appears to be like, I don't even want to call it a layup. I'm saying like it's a slam dunk. It's like they've pulled the goalie. You just got to slide the puck to the back of the net with no defenders and plenty of time to do it. So this is what William Alsup has said in his final probation hearings. He states, and I quote, "It seems to me that in the Zog fire, when we were having our hearings on that one back in 2020, that there had been a declaration that ordered you to find and submit in which of your many contractors had said that he had marked that tree. He was a quality control guy named Larry somebody. And he had marked that very tree for removal and sent an email to another of your contractors saying, please do it. And then it never happened. It never got removed. And then that guy went back on the day that Cal Fire was there collecting the tree and said that was either he said it was the very tree that had marked, that he had marked, or the coordinates were the same. It was something like that. And I do know that Cal Fire, it seems to me, I have it right here somewhere, Cal Fire said that, quote, and he's reading now, after meticulous and thorough investigation, Cal Fire has determined that the Zog fire was caused by a pine tree contacting electrical distribution lines owned and operated by Pacific Gas and Electric. So one of the things that we hope for when we have criminals like PG&E that are on probation is that over the course of probation, they come to accept responsibility. I've learned in this job that's the first big step for any criminal to turn themselves around is to accept responsibility. Now, this is the judge talking. And in 5 years, you've never done that. So he's telling PG&E, in 5 years, you've never accepted responsibility. Going back to the quote, you've never accepted responsibility for any of these fires until it's convenient to do so or you're just up against the wall and have to plead guilty. You've had plenty of time to investigate the Zog thing. You know good and well that you started the fire, and yet you stand here and come up with good lawyer-like reasons why you can't accept responsibility. It's a very big disappointment to the court. 5 years of my life and your life and a lot of the public's life, the U.S. attorney's life, down the drain because you will not accept responsibility. I wish I could be able to say that PG&E has learned something from this probation. It has not. Okay, so we're going to take a really, really, really – well, you know what? We're going to finish this. Okay, so, Liam, we have a clip of 609.20 to 609.30. The last 18 seconds of the hearing – or not the hearing, the presentation, and this is the final interaction I'm going to play between DA Bridget and myself. So go ahead, Liam.
That's PG&E's position. They marked the tree.
That's not their position. They have said that they did not mark it in any actual testimonial fashion. What they may have said as attorneys arguing is not evidence.
Because I – okay.
Okay. So – you know, and last but certainly not least, PG&E acknowledges that. Yes, they marked that tree and failed to cut it down. Based on PG&E's review of records maintained by Mountain G in connection with the post-car fire restoration work, the CFVM inspector who performed the QC inspection of the area of interest in August of 2018 used the collector app to identify for removal two gray pine trees that have a location consistent with the location of the gray pine from which Cal Fire appears to have collected sections after the Zog fire. So I would ask this. DA Stephanie Bridget and Mr. Ben Hanna, the prosecuting attorney for this case. And by the way, this is one little tidbit that, again, not accusatory, but just asking. Ben Hanna left the DA's office after this. After they settled with PG&E, not criminally, but civilly, huge pivot, which really never happens from what I've understood and read, like so quickly. But Mr. Hanna left for the state attorney general's office after his work on this case was over. And then, this is why I was up till 5 o'clock this morning, as I was looking at some stuff, and I realized Mr. Hanna's LinkedIn account still has him as the deputy district attorney. But he's already left for the State Department, and now he's recently, as of Friday, a press release came out, and I just didn't see this till yesterday. He has now been appointed to be a Shasta County Superior Court judge by Gavin Newsom. So That's all I'm going to say to that. So I have these two questions for Miss Bridget and Mr. Ben Hanna. I don't know if he'll answer these or not. He's not an employee of the county. But here's my two questions. Did the judge know that PG&E had, in fact, marked that gray pine tree for removal? And if the judge didn't know, if he didn't know that, then why not? We have all this evidence. And again, I'm a simple guy. And this is just going down to the clerk, paying 25 cents a page to get court transcripts and understand how we got there. How, with all this information, how does the judge not find out about that gray pine tree? Because if you remember back in the video, and this is what stumped me, and I could have, I guess, pulled this little clip up, but I didn't want to jump back and forth. But I asked Miss Bridget at one point, or DA Bridget, I asked her if the judge, because here's what this comes down to. I'll say it like this, because I want to explain it really clearly. I don't want to like confuse myself the way I'm saying it. If the judge in this preliminary hearing, if the judge had this information, this goes to trial. This goes to a criminal prosecution of PG&E for four deaths in Shasta County in District 2, and it's a slam dunk because everybody knows PG&E started this fire and it's documented. And I just read this all to you. So why was that not put into evidence? And that's the question. I just want to know. I just want to know. We're going to take a break. I have a little bit more. And then we are going to take a few callers, maybe a couple callers. And that number is going to be 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567. Here's the thing, though. When you call in, I just want your question, and that's it. So we're going to cut your mic if you want to take time to make comments. I just want to hear questions because it may be something I don't know, and I can look into it. So we're going to be right back. I'll finish with a thought, and then we're going to take some calls.
Imagine a 34-year-old single mother leaving a full-time job to open a home care agency out of her dining room. Hi, this is Sharon Clark, CEO of Home Helpers, and that was my choice 19 years ago, and what a ride it has been. I was proudly my agency's first caregiver in August of 2004. Since then, Home Helpers has supported 2,500 families, employed 1,300 caregivers, moved three offices, and won numerous awards. Personally, our staff provided services for my aging grandparents, allowing them to stay at home in their final years. Home Helpers continues to thrive as Reading's leader in home care. Thank you to our wonderful community for championing my vision so many years ago. Thank you to the dedicated caregivers, past and present, for your compassion and professionalism. And thank you to the families who entrusted us with caring for your loved ones. Our services range from meal preparation to bathing assistance to transitioning home from the hospital. Learn more at ReadingHomeHelpers.com. 19 years and counting. Home Helpers. Life takes you to unexpected places. Love leads you home.
What does great pizza and ice-cold beer have in common? Charlie's Tap House and Mobile Catering, of course. Charlie's Pizza, Pasta, and More, made from scratch with old family recipes using only the finest ingredients. Charlie's will not disappoint when you bite into the bacon spicy mambo pizza. Get ready for an experience you won't find anywhere else. Call Charlie's today to book their patio for your next birthday, baby shower, anniversary, or any other private party. Remember, everything is homemade using secret family recipes. Be sure to try their famous Sundial Steak Salad with perfectly grilled steak tossed in their homemade tomato vinaigrette dressing. Charlie's Tap House, your ultimate beer experience. Charlie's Tap House rule number one, come for the homemade pizza, stay for the beer wall. Charlie's Tap House rule number two, never stay empty-handed. Charlie's Tap House and Mobile Catering in two locations, Anderson Outlets and in Reading at the corner of Shasta and East Streets. Charlie's Tap House for dine-in, takeout, or delivery. Ask about booking their patio for your next private event. Charlie's Tap House, bringing family and friends together.
Hey everyone, Kevin Cry here. I'd like to invite you to listen to my new radio show every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. We'll be talking about everything Shasta County, family, work, recreation, and the topics most important to all of us living here in the Great North State. We'll have roundtable discussions and different guests every week to share with all of you what is going on in Shasta County. Join me, Kevin Cry, every Tuesday right here from 6 to 7 p.m. Looking forward to seeing you soon.
All right, we are back. Kevin Cry, my show. I love Twisted Sister. That song's been my anthem. We've talked about it. I'm going to move on. Okay, so here's what I want to wrap up with. And again, this isn't I don't want it to be accusatory. Again, I'm going to say that. And I welcome phone calls from any of the individuals I've mentioned. A sit down, a discussion. Come on my radio show, and I'll tell you what. I've talked to Nick and Doug Janke, who have poked the hornet's nest. They are opposite every other Sunday of me, so they'll be here next week. And come on their show, and I'm joking, Mr. Nick and Doug, when I say I'll pull rank. Joking, of course, because Doug's a big man, and Nick's honor, he wouldn't fight fair. But I will make sure anybody that's mentioned and anything I've said can come on to their show next week for an interview. Because here's the one thing, too. And I did a lot of work looking at FPPC filings. And to my knowledge, Gavin Newsom's largest contributor is a hedge fund that oversees PG&E. And PG&E, I believe, is Gavin Newsom's third largest donor. I haven't been able to verify that, but that's my preliminary, what I found and what I've tried to surmise and what I've asked some people that kind of follow that stuff. But, you know, that's alarming to me that we have a slam dunk criminal case of four deaths, and it goes from nothing on the criminal side to a $50 million. How do you lose a case but get $50 million in that capacity with all this information that's out there? But then, you know, somebody leaves and gets a job at the State Department and then gets another promotion within a couple weeks or within a month or 2 months, whatever that's been. The exact timeline, I don't know. And now you're a Superior Court judge. And I'm not attacking Mr. Hanna. I just would like answers. I think the community needs answers of how this career was so fast-tracked. And, okay, so we have a caller. Terry, are you there?
I'm here. How you doing, Kevin?
Oh, Mr. Raposa. Good. Thank you. Go ahead. Question.
Hey, yeah, just a... you asked, which I'm excited about, for the report about the fire. The DA says she has it, and they've completed all the information on it. It's ready to go. Did she tell you or give you a time frame when you'd be receiving information?
Yeah, if your question is, have I received the CAL FIRE report, I believe the next Wednesday or Thursday. Yes, I mean, I got that immediately. Do you have a follow-up question?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
And that is that. How does she? Has she? Have you talked to her since? And how does she justify her position? And are you going to make this report and all this information public at a Board of Supervisor meeting?
I'm going to. Thank you. Thank you for your question, Terry. So I'm going to post all this on my website, my Vote Kevin Cry website, probably my Vote Kevin Cry Facebook page. And again, this is just about. I mean, I look at the Rancheria deal and how long that took, right? Or we can talk about really quick. Hang with me. The Oasis, the Costco moved to Oasis. It died a slow death. City Council, City of Reading said, we're going to move it. Staff drugged their feet, and the deal died. And now we've got that disaster down on Churn Creek. I don't want that. That's not what I was elected for. That's not what people want and expect from me. They want action. They want forward movement. So I'm bringing all this public now because I think it's not the bully pulpit, but I guess it is. I want answers. And if there's nothing nefarious and there's nothing to hide, we should be running to media outlets explaining these positions. But yes, I have that CAL FIRE report. I will be talking about this at the Board of Supervisors meeting, and we're going to just continue to get answers. We have another caller. Dale, yes, you're on.
Good morning.
Dale Ball, how you doing, sir?
Great. We got some really good information here. I love it. I did get tuned in a little late, so if I'm asking a question that was already answered, my apologies. This money that came from the Zog fire, isn't it a little bit of conflict of interest that the lion's share went to a group that Stephanie sits on the board of?
Okay, great question. Thank you, Dale. So that's where this originally started, was a gentleman came up and had a real issue with the Children's Legacy Center, again, which is a, you know, I did a tour of that before the actual primary, so well over a year ago, and it seems like a great organization. They do a lot of great things. There's a lot of elected officials, both current and former, definitely former, on that board. But when a gentleman came up, he said, hey, they're getting a lot of money. And so is Bella Vista Farms. Can you explain that? And Stephanie DA Bridget did explain how some of those places were picked. And I still do. I have a problem with, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars going to a school for some playground equipment. And again, she said, I believe 60 to 70% is going to affect IGO, but it's going to have a lot of pass-throughs. I hate freaking pass-throughs, to be honest, but here nor there. But yeah, there is a lot of money going out. And one of the entities that got the largest amount of money, she does sit on the board of. And there is something, government section 1090, which I believe that's a conflict of interest, but that's not my wheelhouse. I'm not an attorney, so I believe people are probably looking into that. And so, yeah. But, yes, there was a lot of money going out to a lot of places, for sure. Liam, do we have any other callers right now in the queue? Okay. So here is where I want to go with this now. And I want to just make it really, really clear. And I've already said it, and I want to say it again. This comes off as I'm processing it in my mind, and I'm looking at all my notes, and I've got a binder over here that I haven't even opened yet with other things highlighted that I wanted to bring up, but I really wanted just to stay on this component. I would love in people, individuals, organizations, entities, attorneys, etc. And when I say attorneys, maybe you're not even with this case, but you've been following it. Reach out to a media outlet. Reach out to me. Reach out to this station's owner, Carl Bott. And come on the show. I always, you can almost guarantee, usually I'll listen on Thursdays because I really like listening to Trish Clark and Carl Bott. But anyway, speak up. Tell your side. Help the community understand and unpack this. Because for me as a supervisor, and a supervisor of 7 months, you know, I'm trying to understand it because I am getting just blown up, lit up with so many questions, so many texts, so many emails. If I go to a restaurant, somebody stops me and says, hey, at the last board meeting. But here's the reality is this is just one topic of probably 100. I mean, my platform, my heart and soul is with kids. Like, I want to do things that are improving the lives of kids. And there's a lot of things with child support services and others that I want to get to work on, as well as potholes and all the other things we're dealing with. But this is just one. So if there are individuals out there that have something to share, have something extra to bring forward, please, please, please bring it forward. We're going to take our last quick break. And when we come back, we're going to wrap up. I always give a little update on the crazy train that is the recall. And I've got some information for that. So we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Commons, an independent senior living community. I'm excited to share with you an exclusive program we are currently offering at River Commons called our Moderate Income Program. This is an in-house program offered by Raystone Senior Living. Those who financially qualify for this program will receive a reduced monthly rate. This rate still includes all of our regular services and amenities. Included in the monthly rent are 3 chef-prepared meals daily, weekly housekeeping and linen services, scheduled transportation, activities, utilities, cable TV, and emergency medical pendant, and more. Our community also has a very friendly family feel, all set on beautiful grounds with scenic views. To learn more about our moderate income program, schedule a tour, or lunch plus a tour, please give us a call at 530-221-2121. You can also visit us on our web at river-commons.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
Alright, we're back. Crazy train. And that's what this has felt like at times the last 7 months. It's felt like a crazy train. Running a campaign for a little over a year and then getting about 3 months off roughly and then going right back to another campaign with this crazy recall. But I'll tell you, I've noticed that the people behind the recall, people pushing the recall, tend to really turn it up when I bring up stuff like this. And I don't know why it freaks them out. I don't know who's working with who behind the scenes, who is getting something for certain activities in Shasta County and across the state that aren't really for the people, like how they're benefiting. But I guarantee you the efforts to get me out are going to really step up because I'm not going away. Like these types of things are what Shasta County needs to know about, and we need answers as a group and as a people. So I have a fundraiser August 5th. August 5th, I have a fundraiser, and if you would like to purchase tickets in person, you can come to my Ninja Coalition gym there at the mall, 900 Dana Drive, or you can go to Jones Fort, or you can call and get a pen and a paper or write it down on the counter, whatever you want. Here's the number. It is 530-776-4790. Again, you can call 530-776-4790. And last but not least, you can go to the website, www.knowoncryrecall.com. And that's cry, C-R-Y-E. So knowoncryrecall.com. We have an amazing, amazing fundraiser coming up on August 5th. And they have until September 13th to collect these signatures. Of course, they said they were going to be done in 30 days. They don't talk about that. A lot of times people set goals, they fail, which I think is important that when you don't reach a goal, you pick your bootstraps up and you keep going. But they make a lot of bold claims, and I don't know how many signatures they have, nor do I care, because I'm not going to spend all my energy sitting biting my fingernails. I'm just going to keep working for you, Shasta County, and that's what's important. During this last break, I did get a text, and I need to correct myself because I had said that I have a problem going with money from the settlement going for playground equipment. That is not what I meant. What I meant was out of the $50 million, IGO, the school, got $200,000 for playground equipment. I think that is great. I think they should get $200,000, but I also think that school district should have got a lot more. They could have built a world-class gymnasium, or they could have done a litany of things for those kids that would live on for years and years and years in terms of facility, building, infrastructure, and not something that goes to people's pockets in terms of growing government. And I'm not saying that's what every nonprofit's doing, but as we all know, my platform's kids, so I'm going to definitely be an advocate to make sure kids get as much as they can for as long as they can. Because let me end with this. Not so much the recall stuff, but what I believe or what I know. I think every politician goes into office and they want to make a difference. They want to do good work. I believe that. And I think a lot just get beat down and realize it is such an uphill battle. And what I realize in the time I'm a supervisor, I'm not going to get accomplished the things that are truly deep in my heart. And that is this, is to change the culture and the trajectory of kids in Shasta County. But you know where that starts and where and I have always known this, but I'm beyond convinced this is where my work is going to continue to go into. And this is where we talk about HHSA and child support services, et cetera. And by the way, there's a backpack drive. So if you don't know about that, reach out to me. I'll tell you about that. But we have to get the nuclear family rowing and the resources they need more and more and more, because it starts in the home. It starts with, doesn't matter if it's grandpa and grandma, aunt, uncle, older brother or sister raising that individual who's not 18. But those kids need the experiences, the love, the care, the nurturing to be a productive member of society. So I'm going to continue to make sure kids get everything they need within my power to have the best opportunity for success in their life. Because one thing we know, kids can't choose their parents, and they live with the hand they're dealt, and that's what's important. So I'm going to continue to work really hard for you, Shasta County, and more specifically District 1. If you have any questions at all, please email me, please call me. As always, I'm a really, really, really easy guy to get a hold of. You can find me at the Ninja Gym there at the mall on most days, and if not, I'm at the county office. Please come by and say hi if you see anybody that I've spoken about in this context today as it relates to the Zog Fire. Encourage them to reach out to a media outlet or to me, and let's have a discussion about some of the things I brought up, because I can't get all the answers from court documents and testimonies, and I'd like to get more answers because I know all of you listeners want answers, and I think as a county, we deserve that. Shasta County, I love you. I'll see you back here in 2 weeks. Have a great week.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.